sometimes see people who seem like they're doing very well, who all of a sudden seem to take a bit of a nosedive. And it's seemingly out of nowhere. You'll see it just happen, and all of a sudden, just everything seems to go wrong. So the question is, what exactly happened? How could things go so bad so quickly? Gradual decline, I think we all understand. Gradual decline is when a person, you know, slowly but surely loses everything he has. That happens. But a sudden break, where Yochanan Kohen Gadol all of a sudden becomes a tzaddiki almost overnight, what's pshat? How is it shayach for a person to have that happen to them? The Torah answers every question. There's no question that the Torah doesn't answer, and it answers this one as well in this week's parsha. There's a pasuk in this week's parsha, Parak Yud Aleph Pasuk Mem Gimel, that says, Al tishaktu et nafsho seichem, b'chol asheret hashoritz, v'lo sitamu behem benit meisam bom. Plus it says that a person should not disgust himself with all the different types of creepy, crawly creatures that are on the ground, and not become tame through them. And the big line here is, benit meisam bom, that if you do so, then you will become tame through them, that you will affect yourself through them. Now the Midik Neged Mida involved is written by Rashi. It says in Rashi, it's really a quote from the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Lamed Testament Aleph, Im Atem Metamin Behen Ba'aretz, if you're metame yourselves with these things down here on earth by eating these shkups and ramashim, if you eat them down here on earth, Af Ani Metame Eschem Ba'olam Haba Ubi Yeshivas Maila, that I will be metame you in Olam Haba as well as Yeshiva Shal Maila. That's a very strange lashon. I'm going to be metame you in Olam Haba and Yeshiva Maila. So Mizrahi explains, Rabbi Leo Mizrahi explains, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kadosh V'Tahor, Nivdal, so to speak, separated from everyone else, no shaykhus to anyone else. If you act in a disgusting manner, and you act like a tame person, then Hashem will, by definition, stay away from you, and you'll be on your own. If you, so to speak, want to keep away from Kedusha, take yourself away from the Kedusha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has set, then that will be. You'll be in that spot where you wanted to be in the first place. You will be separated from God, and you won't be in the same place as the Kedoshim and the Torah. You will not be in Olam Haba. You will not be allowed into Yeshiva Shomaila. You're going to be separated from those areas. But the effect is more than what's going to be loss of love. We're not talking just Olam Haba and Yeshiva Shomaila. The effect is immediate. Your mazel feels that something's different. Your mazel feels like it's in chayrim when this v'nit meisem bum happens. Your mazel feels like you're not the same person before you even realize what's happening. There's something going on with your neshama. It's like a spiritual plague, like an absolute spiritual plague. You feel separated, unanswered, uninspired, unaffected by anything that has to do with kedusha. Maybe you've seen the people that go to the wall, the kotel, and just treat it as any other wall. The people that on Yom Kippur treat it as if it's just the same day as all, as any other day. A person who, even when they're davening shacharis, mincha, maariv, of any real day, just does not feel any effect whatsoever. That's beneath meisam bum. You have a spiritual plague on you. A spiritual plague that destroys you, that doesn't allow any kedusha to affect you whatsoever. See, it's not easy to get into tefillah. It's not easy to get into learning. Maybe for the intellectual aspects, maybe you'll be happy with that, but tefillah especially, there's nothing there that really grabs you, that says, do this. Because unless you're really into it, there's nothing there for you. There's nothing there. Maybe you'll be into a song if you're a big music guy, then maybe you'll be into a Karl Bach Kabbalah Shabbos. But if you're not into music, if you don't like the singing, and in fact you find it a little bit offensive that somebody is taking up all your time by singing, then you go into a long davening and you feel nothing. You feel nothing. And that's a normal feeling for somebody whose soul is affected by what they've eaten, by something that happened to you. Lahavdil. It's not like this is so far off from what we see physically. If a person eats a ton of sugar, a ton of trans fat, a ton of whatever it is, your arteries get clogged. And it happens with your veins, in which you somehow, nothing flows. The blood isn't flowing the way that it is. The way that a diabetic is, and the way that the sugar starts going through his whole system, the arteries are closed off. There's nothing there. That lahavdil, we can see this physically. There's a possibility of eating something which is not good for you to eat. And when you eat these things that are not good for you to eat, you literally clog your heart from being able to work the right way. You know, your blood flow can't flow the normal way, and chas v'shalom leads to a heart attack.
That physically, without any nothing else, just physically speaking, we understand it. It works the exact same way in Ruchnius. That if you end up using it in that form, if you abuse, overuse, take the wrong foods, so to speak, the shrutzim, the shkutzim that we're referring to over here, your neshama is comatose. There's a soul attack, and your neshama no longer has the ability. The difference is like this. By a heart attack, your neshama is working, but your body cannot move. By a neshama attack, it's the exact opposite. Your body is able to move. You're able to breathe, you're able to talk, you're able to walk, but your neshama is dead. Your neshama feels nothing. It's choked out so that it's not there with you at the same time. It might be there, it might be around, the same way the body is around when there's a heart attack. It might be around, but it's just not the same. It literally is, it could be compared the same way that you could understand this type of a thing. To put it another way, if you wanted to take it off from that concept and put it in somewhere else, it's like tsaras, the idea of what leprosy stands for. Once a person has that feeling, the little white mark that goes inside the skin, and you see that it's a little bit deep, the Kohen looks at it and declares him Tameh and sends him out of the camp. He's kicked out, he's taken away, he's told to go somewhere else. I mean, that type of a person is physically removed from the boundaries of where regular Jews are and told to go somewhere else. It's the same concept. You're kicked out of the Machaneh of Shemayim, of Yeshiva Shomayla, of Olam Haba. You're not allowed in when a person had this type of a shekets, this type of a shark. And notice, it's only a bug. All you did was eat a bug or a rat or a mouse or a lobster or something like that. And this is the effect, the direct effect. And it's the same type of idea what Sarah stands for. And that's the connection between the Parshas, the end of Parshas Shmini, which says Venitz Mesa Bum, to the beginning of Tazria Metzora, which deals with Sarah. That's the connection between the two, the obvious connection between the two. Because the truth is, it's not just a colloquial phrase that's used throughout America. You are what you eat. It's true. You are 100% what you eat. Lahavdil, again, it can be physically proven from mother's milk to their child. We all know that a mother's milk, it tastes like whatever the mother ate that day. What literally goes through the body and is given over to the child is whatever food the mother took in that day goes to the kid. If the kid is allergic to milchiks and the mother drinks or eats something milchik, then it'll come out through the milk and that milk will affect the child. The child will have the same effect as if it's not a totally different substance. It literally goes through the body and allows itself to become whatever it is. And so too over here, says the Ramban. It's in Parak Yud Aleph Pasuk Yud Gimel. The reason why ophos, tamayim, are not able to be eaten, the reason why certain birds cannot be eaten, says the Ramban, because domo mechumam la'asveriyoso, because these birds, their blood, or its blood, warms itself up and causes the bird to become cruel. The shakur, the gas. Not good translations for these. A disgusting creature. Umolid hamarira hasrufash harhores. It causes you to have other bad midos within you. The nosin akzaris blev. And it makes you cruel. Eating a not kosher bird, an ostrich, a crow, anything that's mentioned over here is going to turn you into a cruel person. Because again, you are what you eat. These types of effects are direct. It goes on you. Again, we don't feel it. We never do. Because this is our neshama being affected, not our body being affected. We don't think that we're being cruel because we ate something. It happens. But this is the reason why. You see a person who all of a sudden goes down. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh about Yochanan Kohen Gadol, the reason why he became a Tzeduki is because he ate treif. That's what happened. After 80 years of being a Kohen Gadol, 80 years of being a Kohen Gadol, he ate one thing, and all of a sudden gone. Gone. He's a tzaduki. Goes off. For one thing that he eats. But that's the effect. Food has a tremendous effect on you. And sometimes there's no way out of it. Sometimes there's no way to get around. Chofetz Chaim gives a mashal. It's a really, really good mashal. I'm going to try to make it more contemporary, because when you put it more back in the day style, you know, dealing with a leather tannery, we really don't get leather tanneries anymore. A guy is a perfume seller, perfume and cologne guy. Let's just pretend that he's a normal guy, and he sells perfume and cologne for a living, and he's a very delicate guy. Again, I'm trying to say that he's still somewhat normal, but the guy's he's an Istinus. When he gets around these types of things, if he gets around something smelly, he can't stand it. You know, the smell, his nose, his olfactory senses are on overload style, and if he starts smelling things that are disgusting, he just can't take it. He needs to be around his spices at all times. And he's around them, he always has them in his store, he's always wafting with this beautiful, delicious smell that's always there. All these smells, and this smell goes through the store, goes out the door, into the street, and people in the street who are passing by smell it, and they immediately come in. They want to see what he has to sell. I mean, it smells so good. They come in, they buy cologne, they buy perfume, they buy whatever it is that they want to buy there. They buy all these things because it wafts out, it goes through the store. His next door neighbor went out of business. Paper dealing guy. You know, he sells paper. He went out of business. And a person bought it. He's a recycler. He takes in all this garbage, you know, old milk cartons and Coke cartons and Coke bottles and everything like that, and he burns it all down and he turns it into new plastic, new paper and everything like that. Now, suffice it to say, there's tremendous smell involved in all this stuff. Not only the garbage that he's hoarding that's sitting inside the room that he has to take care of, but the factory that's involved, the burning down of the rubber. Burning rubber is disgusting smelling. Burning down paper is a tremendous smell as well, and there's a huge smokestack. It goes out into the sky. The whole place starts reeking of smoke and burnt rubber and the brand new processes, and it smells, it's loud and everything. The guy, the sensitive guy, goes over and wants to knock over. He knocks on the door and he tries walking. He walks and takes one step in and he almost passes out. It's so bad. He can't deal with it. The smell is so absolutely horrible. He can't deal with it. So immediately he closes the door and he runs out. He just says, I can't take this. This is not for, I can't deal with this. What am I can't do it. So he never told him. Weeks pass. Months pass, and eventually the guy ends up going out of business. People no longer smell the besumin and the perfume in the streets. All they can smell is rubber and paper being burned. So they're going all the way around. They don't notice that there's a perfume shop right next to it. It's just the smell is overpowering. Nobody goes there anymore. The guy loses all of his business. One of the last days he's going out of business, the man who owned the recycling shop came over and said, listen, I apologize. I realize that my business, you know, really destroyed yours, and I feel bad. I want to make you an offer. I really need this storefront. I think I can double everything I've been doing, and I've been making a great living, but I think I can make even more. He said, I'm willing to take you on as a partner. You give me your storefront. We'll knock down the wall in between, and we'll go in together. And instead of being a perfume man, you'll do like me. You'll be a recycling man, just like me. We'll go in together, and you'll make the same amount that I am. And I'm making now way more than you ever made selling perfumes and spices and things like that. You'll make tons of more money now. Join me. Come join me. Let's do it. Let's work this out together. The guy doesn't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle it. I haven't been able to. So listen, it's not that big of a deal. Take a little clothespin, put it on your nose, and you'll work, and you'll be fine. Don't worry. The guy does it. It's annoying. He has the clothespin on the whole time. He can barely eat. He can't, whatever it is, and his eyes are watery, and it's annoying. But he does the first day, and he makes a good living. Comes home, he brings money to his wife. It's the first time in a while that he's able to have money. The next day, he comes back. A week passes, 2 weeks pass, and then suddenly, he decides, you know what? What do I need the clothespin for? What do I need this clothespin for? I'll deal with the smell. Takes off the clothespin, starts smelling, and starts realizing, it's not that bad. I can deal with this, right? He can deal with it. At first, he's like, he has to go outside, and then come back inside, you know, a little bit, because it's such a huge smell. But he goes out eventually. Month passes. He's so used to it. I mean, now it's just like second nature. There's no problem with him sitting inside the store the entire time, right? After 2 months pass, he's making fun of the people on the street that are walking around the store so they don't have to smell anything that's inside there. Look at them. It's like, those fools. They have no idea what they're missing over here. There's no bad smell over here. This is fine. There's nothing to worry about. And he goes home and he tells his wife, and he's like, I can't believe those guys passing by the store today as if they couldn't smell anything, holding their nose and walking by. Such wimps. Those guys are such wimps. His wife looks at him and says, you don't realize where you came from? I mean, that was you. That was you a couple months ago. You were the guy who was so sensitive to that smell. Now you're just used to it. Now you're used to garbage. You're used to smelling the smell of burnt rubber. You're used to everything. You don't even know how bad you smell. You have no idea how bad you smell. That mashal, says the Chafetz Chaim, is exactly what happens to this person. You eat something, and then all of a sudden, it's gone. It's gone. Now I realize the mashal really dealt with a gradual decline, and not a sudden decline. I realize that's a difference. That is a bit of a difference between what we're trying to say. Nonetheless, the fact is right there. You can understand it as the person understood the, what he had to do, what he thought he had to do, went in for the bad smell, even though he knew, but he wanted the money, and was willing to give in to that problem in order to take whatever he could take. That's the way it's like in Tzimtzum HaLev. It just affects you. Whether you know it or you don't, you don't even realize it. It's there. It affects you. This is how we're going to end. Rav Chaim Kanievsky once said that when a bachur isn't learning well, doesn't understand Gemara, doesn't like Gemara, can't remember his learning, when something like that happens, it's because of this. It's because of something that he ate. Something that he ate. It does not mean that he had treif, necessarily. It doesn't mean that he ate something that was... It's because he ate something that was pure taiva. And when a person eats something which is pure taiva, you can't get yourself used to learning Gemara. You can't think straight, because your brain is screaming out taiva, 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 and the Gemara is screaming out precious, precious, precious. And your brain is screaming the exact opposite of the thing that you're learning. So in the end, your brain wins out. You can't do anything. Nothing enters it. Nothing goes in. It just clogs up, and there's nothing that you can do with it. So he said, he gave a story. 90-year-old man walks into Rav Chaim. He's from the Alter Haim, from Europe. Comes into Rav Chaim in Bnei Brak and says to Rav Chaim, you know, I've never had a taiva to learn Gemara. I never liked Gemara. Thought Gemara was the worst subject. I could never understand it. Chaim says to him, that's not true. It's not true. Did you ever like it as a kid? And the man thought back. He's 9 years old. It's been a while. It's been a while since he was that. And he said, you know what? You're right. When I was back in Europe, I had a private tutor when I was a little kid. 8, 9, 10 years old, whatever it was, I had a private tutor. And I actually really loved Gemara. And I did love Gemara. I loved learning it with my tutor, and I loved doing it, and I loved going through the different parts. But then, one Shavuos, I remember it was a Shavuos, that's when it stopped. It was one Shavuos, and I just couldn't take it anymore, and I decided I'm never going to learn a Gemara ever again. And I've tried. I've tried hiring tutors, I've tried hiring Rabbeim, I've tried getting people to help me learn. I can't do it. I have no time for Gemara. I can't learn Gemara. So Chaim said to him, it's almost like a therapy session, what did you eat that Shavuos? What did you eat? The guy hemmed and hawed. Rav Chaim turned to him again and said, what did you eat that Shavuos? This guy remembers, well, that Shavuos, I had a friend, little quotation marks, I had a friend who offered me a bit of chazer. Says, unbelievable meat, a little bit of white meat, and I tasted it. I didn't like it. I thought it was disgusting. I immediately made myself throw up afterward. I tried to get rid of it. And I've never eaten it since then. So Chaim turned to him and said, you had a little bit of chazer. You had a little bit of chazer on that Shavuos. Says Rav Chaim, that's the reason why you've never liked Gemara. Since that point on, that little bit of chazer that you had, that davar acher, caused you to have this despising that you have for Gemara. You can't take it. You can't do it. For 80 years, almost 80 years, this guy could not handle Gemara. Could not handle it. Why? Because one time he had something that was tavet, and he did tshuva for it. Rav Chaim said, you got to do more. He's 90 years old, remember. He said to Rav Chaim, what do I have to do? I'll do anything in order to try to learn Gemara again. I'll do it again. What do I have to do? Rav Chaim told him, you have to fast for a day. The guy said, I'm 90. He's a 90-year-old man. It's not easy for him to fast a day. I don't think he would have said that by a normal guy who's 20, 25 years old. Right? That would have been, you know, fast for a couple of days. I don't know, so I'm not going to speak for Rav Chaim. He said, fast for a day. So he said, I'll try my hardest, I'll try to do it. And Rav Chaim told him, you should learn Hilchos Machlos Asuros in the Rambam all day. Spend the day, fast, and learn Hilchos, Machlos, Asuros all day long. Spend that day, and then you'll be able to learn Gemara. He doesn't say what happened. I don't know if the guy died, to be honest with you. It doesn't say the end of the story, you know, because he fasted. I have absolutely no idea. But what a day. I have absolutely no idea. That I can't tell you. It's such a crazy, crazy thing. Such a crazy thing. We take for granted that we keep kosher. We think to ourselves that, well, if it's really healthy, how come the non-Jews are stronger than we are? Right, when it comes to the Olympics and it comes to everything, the Jews are not more powerful. We have no idea what the spiritual effect of these foods are. We have no clue. And we can't gauge that. There's nothing we can do to define that. There's no definition. We can't look it up. We can't look it up on the computer. We can't test it. There's nothing we can do. When a person sits there and eats a meal and adds on a taiva piece afterwards, you have no idea what effect that's going to have on you. That doesn't mean that you can't sometimes give in to taiva. I'd love that, but I don't think that's our world. I don't think that's the world that we live in, especially not in America. But let's be careful a little bit. What are we eating? What are we putting into our bodies? And we're asking, why don't I like Gemara? Why don't I love davening? Why don't I have an affinity? Look at what you're putting into yourself. If you're into taiva, then your taiva is destroying your drive to daven and learn. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was screaming and saying, stop giving in to taiva, and then I can find a way in. He can bore his way into that hole. But you got to stop somewhere. You got to close up one hole in order to open up another. That's the way it has to be. See, that's the idea of what Tzimtzum HaLev is. And this leads into Pesach. We're a month away, less than a month away, 28 days now, before Pesach. Pesach is all about breaking taiva. Understanding that we all have a taiva to sleep later, sleep through morning Seder, do whatever we want during the day. We all have a desire to be able to eat whatever we want, to drink whatever we want, whenever we want, at whatever time. That's not the way life is. It's not the way life is physically, even, by most people. You can't just stop, get up and eat or drink whatever you want and not worry about reprisal. It's always worried health-wise, health risks, anything that comes through. But it's not, it's true spiritually. That's what we have to get down into our heads. Even if you don't see a difference, there is a difference. Every time you give in, stop one time, precious, stop one thing, and get ourselves ready to stopping bread. You know how hard it is not to eat bread? Have you ever tried it before? For a week? It's difficult. It's really difficult to have matzah all day long, and even not Sparty matzah. I think that's one of the reasons why Ashkenazim did it. They just wanted it a little bit more precious, to make it cracky. It's difficult. We have to do it. That's what life is all about. Not giving in every time. Working on ourselves. Let's work on precious now. Let's work on a little bit of precious. Try to take ourselves to the next level. Little by little, and understanding that everything is... Everything has to be taken the right amount. Right amount. Know what to take, know what not to take, know how much to take of it. Let's work on that now. That leads us into Pesach, away from indulgence.